Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you. And we continue to hold you in the light.
So this is the third week that we've been working with the what we call statement of truth in the 23rd Psalm. And I always start out by reading the whole 23rd Psalm as a prayer thought to help us to establish the truth in our minds as the basis for what we're getting ready to study. And also remember that when you're reading statements like this from Scripture, it creates a vibration in your body. And that vibration is the healing dynamic of being in tune or attached with the idea of spirit. So let me just read this again, the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. And yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. And surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Okay. So again, this is the third, and each week we're going over a different line so we understand the deeper meaning in each one of those lines of Scripture. And as you heard me say several times before, and it's, you know, always makes you want to know what are these other levels, that there are seven levels of meaning in everything that you read in the Bible, right? How many people in your minds are going, what are all seven levels, right? But the thing is, we can only understand one level at a time. All right, we can only understand a level depending on where we are. So this week we're going to study the verse, he restoreth my soul and he leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Now this idea, he restores my soul, can present the erroneous belief that our soul can be lost. So it's important for us to realize that our soul can never be lost. We can have the perception of disconnection, which can result in the experience of a soul that feels lost or disconnected. But in reality, we can never be lost or disconnected from the truth that permeates and perpetuates all that is. Does that all make sense? Okay. And actually, you know, additionally, we can never be disconnected from God because God can never be disconnected from God's self. Meaning God is individualized as each one of us as the divine force that gives us the breath of life. So as we all know, we are the eachness of the allness. We're the individual expression of God. Again, we are the wave in the ocean, and the wave cannot be disconnected from the ocean. It can appear to be, but it never is. And it's the same thing with us. We are never disconnected from that which we are actually from. So the problem, however, is though, even though we believe on an intellectual level that we are the individual expression of God, belief alone is not enough to restore or awaken us to the truth. All right. So some of us, as true students, we've been given a commission. Okay, and, you know, as it says in Mission Impossible, if you choose to accept this mission, right? And that mission is to imbue ourselves with the understanding, the inner knowing that God, that the love of God, the power of God, the presence of God is constantly restoring us to our original state, which is whole and well and filled with love and compassion. Okay, let me just say that again. So as true students, it's our mission to imbue ourselves with the understanding, the inner knowing that the love of God, the power of God, the presence of God is constantly restoring us to our original state, which is whole and well and filled with love and compassion. Okay. So this is a process that's always going on in us. And the word imbue means to inspire or permeate. But it also means to stain and dye deeply. All right, so just as some clothing has a dye that washes out or fades eventually, so are there students of truth whose faith is easily washed out by the trials and tribulations of life. And just as an article of clothing may not be color fast, many true students are not faith fast. Right? But there is dyed cloth where the dye runs so deeply in the fabric that it never washes out. This must become the nature of our faith, that it runs so deeply that it cannot be washed out. Okay? Now, some of you may remember that many, many years ago, I used an example I had read somewhere about how cloth is dyed in India. Okay, it says, in India, the process used for dyeing cloth is that the cloth is dipped in, let's say, red dye until it becomes rich with the color. Then the cloth is laid out in the sun to dry and is left in the sun until the color is bleached out by the sun. Then it's dipped back into the red dye again and placed back into the sun until the color fades out. And this process continues, but each time the cloth retains more of its color until finally, after many, many times of doing this, dipping it and bleaching it, the sun can no longer bleach the color out of the cloth. Okay, so each time we become still and surrender ourselves to Spirit in prayer, we are dipping ourselves in Spirit. Okay, and when we enter back into the activities of our lives, the richness of Spirit that we received in our prayer time begins to fade. Okay, so we need to again go ye apart for a while, dip ourselves back into Spirit again, and then back into the world. And those who are diligently committed, thank you, sweetie, right? Those who are diligently committed to this process of prayer will keep doing that process, you know, entering into the stillness and back into the activities of life. We find that over time we begin to maintain some of the calmness that we were getting in prayer, and we can still hold that calmness when the activities of our lives kick in, okay? So eventually, after many cycles of stillness and life activity, we begin to realize He restores my soul, all right? Because we know when we get into life, life sends us amok, all right? And so we have to enter back into the stillness. But over time, we begin to understand He restores my soul, meaning we're being moved in consciousness from belief to knowing. All right? And as we learned in previous lessons, belief is not faith fast. It can be easily washed out, changing the color of our thinking from faith to fear. All right? So in addition, belief can cause us to become stuck at the level of affirmation. We talked about this a little bit last week. Belief can cause us to become stuck at the level of affirmation. And as we learned again in last week's lesson, even though affirmations are a good thing, they have a tendency to hold us in the anticipation, waiting for our good to come. You follow me? We're affirming our good, but we're doing this affirmation because we do not yet believe that the good has come. Okay? Now, so we mean that the joy is about to take place, but has not yet happened. And as we all have experienced, we are susceptible to losing faith while waiting for our joy to happen. Okay? So, but again, to restate what we said before, the statement, He restores my soul, is not an affirmation. It's a statement of truth. All right? So when you say He restores my soul, you may be saying it as an affirmation, but as you're saying it, it is happening. It is happening constantly. It's happening all the time. Okay? It's an acknowledgement of the truth, a truth that only can be recognized as being true when it is the fruitage of spiritual realization. Now, that word fruitage means something that happens. It's a process or a time or a condition that is needed to bear fruit. So meaning one can only acknowledge a truth as being truly true as a result of going through a process. There was something I read one time, or I think I said it to you, where knowledge is just a rumor until you had the experience. All right? So it's like you have to go through the process. And so in accordance with this lesson, the process we're referring to is the cycle of practicing the silence, and then entering back into our life experience, then back into the silence, and so on, continuously being dipped in spirit, having our soul restored until we come to know that the Father and I are truly one. Okay? And when I say about this process of prayer meditation, you know, it's not that you don't have to sit in long hours of doing this. Prayer meditation could be you're stuck in traffic, and for a moment you just center yourself. Because if you don't center yourself, you're upset about what? They're just stuck in traffic, all right? And so it's any process that allows you the time to sit for a moment and just center yourself. That second, it might only be a second for you in terms of time on a clock, but in spiritual time, it's an infinity. You get it? Anytime you still yourself, anytime you become enter into the silence and kind of clear your mind of all the stuff that's going on, that time is you're being dipped in spirit, and in spiritual time, it's an infinity. Okay? So affirmations are truly powerful. They are the prelude to acknowledgement. Affirmations develop the consciousness for acknowledgement. But whereas affirmations are used to discover the truth, acknowledgement is an expression of gratitude and joy for having realized that what you are asking for has already happened. Because the very fact that you can imagine it means that it's already happened. All right? It's happened metaphysically, and if you hold on to it, it will become physical. Does that make sense? Okay? So the key we want to keep in mind, and this is a Bible verse I've used in the last couple of weeks, you want to keep in mind John 4:35, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already ripe for harvest. It means that thing that you want has already occurred. Okay? So we typically do not doubt that when we cut our finger, we know it's going to heal. Right? It might hurt in a minute. You go about doing it. You say to yourself, well, I'm going to help this heal. I'm going to put ointment on it. I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it. You know, but still, you know it's going to heal. We know from experience with the healing process that our finger will heal. However, it's imperative to our spiritual growth that we come to know that our finger heals not because of the Band-Aid or the ointment. Our finger heals because of the truth he restores. Whatever we are going through, we need to hold on to the truth that he restores, all right? And if you think about it, you know, we contribute most of our healing to outside forces, you know, the Advil or the whatever, okay? We think doctors and medicine restore our health. We believe counselors, motivational speakers, and workshops restore our sense of self-worth. Or, we think that the right opportunity would come along and restore our finances. All of these things do work, but none of them are the cause. None of them restore, nor are they capable of restoring. All right? All of the outside vehicles we turn to for help are just that. They are vehicles. They are channels through which the healing energy of he who restores is flowing. And that's a powerful thing to think about. Yes, I'm not saying don't go to the doctor. Definitely go to the doctor. But know that that person is merely an instrument through which the activity of God is working. It's called materia medica. It's like God understood that there's a lot of cases where we don't believe we can heal ourselves. So the universe created materia medica. So those medicines we take, those things we do, they are just vehicles that help our body to do what it's doing, or it can do automatically. Okay? And you know, I'm using the word he in this, he restores, purely to maintain the vernacular of the psalm. But in reality, we know that he refers to the omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, divine power that permeates the universe. And when we, you know, when we have that idea in mind, that we become aware of the restoration process. That's the key, is to be aware of the restoration process, knowing that I'm constantly being restored, okay? And there are those moments in time or circumstances where God, or I should say, there is no moment in time or circumstance when God is not restoring. The Lord is my shepherd. He makes me whole. He leads me to wholeness. He restores me to wholeness. Let me say it again. The Lord is my shepherd. He makes me whole. He leads me to wholeness. He restores me to wholeness. And that is the truth, right? Anything else is a fabrication of the ego. It's the prodigal. How many people know the story of the prodigal son? Okay, it's the prodigal one that left his parents and home and went to a far place where he felt disconnected from the source of his good. Likewise, because we have forgotten who we really are, we have gone to a far place within ourselves where we have little conscious connection to the source of our good. We've forgotten who we really are. And yes, we have a strong intellectual belief. I keep referring to that. We have a strong intellectual belief that we're connected to spirit. Somebody asks you, oh yeah, I know I'm connected to spirit. But it's really right now, for most of us, an intellectual belief. Okay, but as we learn, intellectual belief is not faith fast and can be washed out when the detergent of life becomes too strong. And we may think of ourselves as colored with faith, but upon close examination, we may find that the true color of our thoughts and feelings and beliefs are deeply stained with fear. Okay, and Jesus said to the centurion in Matthew 8:13, as you have believed, so it will be done unto you. And thousands of years before Jesus, Krishna expressed the same principle of spiritual yoga scripture of yoga called the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, verily, a man is what his faith is. And in Book of Proverbs, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So using the same train of thought that we use with coloring the cloth, we need to ask ourselves, how have I been coloring myself, and how deep does that color run? Okay? But, you know, because, you know, according to Krishna and Jesus and the prophets of the Old Testament, we color ourselves by the way we think, by what we believe, and by what we hold to be true in our hearts. We are coloring ourselves, okay? And right now, whereas we are able to, whether we're able to admit it or not, the things of the outer world are coloring us with much greater vibrance than the things of our inner world, all right? We're much more in tune with that outer coloring process. And as the author of a psalm of healing says, the moment we feel that what we believe is true, that feeling gains momentum. It takes shape and becomes our experience in the world. Deep-seated feelings attract unto us conditions corresponding to those feelings. All right? So prayer, meditation, contemplation, especially when engaged in just to know God. Let me say this again. Prayer, meditation, contemplation, especially when engaged in just to know God, begins to recolor the fabric of our being. And let me say this again. Prayer, meditation, contemplation, especially when engaged in just to know God, not asking God for anything. You follow me? Just to know God, just to make that connection, begins to recolor the fabric of our being. And the recoloring process occurs as we begin to realize that below the surface of our fear and worry, there's a healing power and presence at work. And this power and presence is constantly working to penetrate our barrier of fear, doubt, and worry. All right? So while we are worrying, there's something that's working, trying to break through the barrier of that worrying. Okay? And this healing power and presence called God is eternal. Now listen to this. God is compassionately relentless. God is compassionately relentless, constantly seeking to enfold into itself and restore to wholeness everything that believes it is separate from it. So while we are steady believing that we are separate from God, and we never really say much sort of that I'm separate from God, but the fear and worry that we have is saying I am separate from God. You get what I'm saying? Every time we go through that process, we're proclaiming I am separate from God. But while we're doing that, God is compassionately relentless, trying to enfold us back into itself. Okay? Notice I didn't say God is trying to make you feel better about yourself. It's kind of trying to enfold you back into itself so that you remember who I really am. Okay? And, you know, we get an urge to pray. We get an urge to pray when we believe we are outside of the healing presence. And we probably never thought about it that way before, but that's the nature of petitioning prayer. When you're begging God to do something for you, you feel outside of that restoring presence, outside of that healing presence. We are asking God, begging God to let us in. But God, on the other hand, is trying to say to us, you're already in. So meditation and contemplation bring about the realization that we're already in. So when you keep dipping yourself back into spirit, and keep that in your mind, you know, prayer, meditation, contemplation, dipping yourself back into spirit, what is happening, you begin to realize that I am already in. I've never been out. I've always been in that presence. We are forever in the healing, restoring power and presence of God, and that's the truth we must hold on to, okay? So the second part of the verse that I said we were going to do today is he leads me in the path of righteousness. Most of us are trapped in a dream in which we are constantly trying to negotiate our way through the fears of our ego. Let me say that again. Most of us are trapped in a dream in which we are constantly trying to negotiate our way through the fears of our ego. All right? That's all of us. There's always something that we fear. And we're always trying to negotiate our way through that process. And it is obvious that we do not know how to wake up from this dream. We cannot wake ourselves up from the dream, okay? And that's our real dilemma. I repeat these things over and over again, but the first Adam put us to sleep, and the second Adam, Jesus, came to wake us up, okay? And that's the process we're going through. And in the Lord's Prayer, Jesus taught us to pray, and lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. In the New Living Translation of the Bible, it says, and don't let us yield to temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Okay? Now, what is being called the evil one is how the ego shapes our consciousness in accordance with its interpretation of the events and people in our lives. Everybody catch that? All right. So what he's saying, what they're calling evil is the ego keeps reshaping us. We see stuff happens. We take that in, as the author of the book of Psalms said, and we begin to become that dynamic through our own thinking. Okay. So if, for example, our ego believes in, say, the reality of lack and limitation, it will give us a consciousness of lack and limitation. And we will become in consciousness whatever the ego believes is true. So this is the temptation Jesus is telling us not to yield to. So yes, our senses are going to look out into the world and say, this is going on, okay? But Jesus is saying, don't yield to that. Don't become that just because you see that it's going on. Is that making sense? All right. So lead us not in temptation, or do not let us yield to temptation, is the same. Please, God, help me not to yield or become in consciousness that which I'm perceiving. I need to hold on to my faith. All right. So, and again, Jesus is telling us not to yield. He said that this is what we want to be delivered from. In this statement, he leads us in the path of righteousness, is stating that the Spirit of truth is always leading us to the truth, but we have to do the prayer work necessary to become mentally attuned to hearing and following that truth. So the truth is always being prayed within us, as I said last week. I don't remember if you met, but as you are praying to God, God is praying within you. So the truth is always being prayed within us, but we have to do the work that's needed to open ourselves up to hear God's prayer. So when I'm saying, God, I need this, God is praying, I've already given you that. But you have to wake up to understand how to take part of it, how to embrace it, okay? Buddha calls the path of righteousness the Noble Eightfold Path. And that path includes right thought, right comprehension of the truth, right motive for life, right perceptions for life, right livelihood, right concentration, right meditation, and right remembrance. Okay? Now, Pantelogy, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, the father of yoga psychology, presents an eightfold path of righteousness. It consists of self-control, religious observance, postures, regulation of breath, restraint of the senses, steadiness of the mind, meditation, and profound contemplation. Jesus gave us an eightfold path of righteousness in the Sermon on the Mount in the form of the Beatitudes. I'm not going to read them, but you can find them in Matthew 5, 3 through 9. That's three great masters who gave us this eightfold process for getting to the mind of righteousness. And righteousness means right thinking. Yes, what is right thinking? I see what is happening, or I'm actually feeling what's happening in my body, something going on, but that is not the truth. It may be a fact, but it is not what? The truth. Does everybody understand the difference? Okay, so the fact is what my senses are able to detect, but beyond my senses is my spirit, and my spirit knows the truth that overrides every three-dimensional fact. Okay, so a relationship with spirit is a beautiful thing, okay? Something that at some level we all desire, but it takes work. It takes a commitment. It takes a wanting and a relationship to go through this process, okay? You have to be willing to be changed at the core of your being, and it's a willingness to surrender. And Pam and I were talking about this last night, even in our own lives, our own relationship. We talked about all the things that we each as individuals have let go of that brings great joy now to our relationship. You get what I'm saying? You know, it's been a 51-year process, but through that process, and I think the first part of it, we were not really in a state of trying to awake, but things happen in our lives that cause us to start waking up. And we let go of so many things that now our life is just pure joy. You get what I'm saying? Right? So it is a process that you have to go through. Things in your ego, things in your whole dynamic. We know what we're talking about, right? That stuff that gets on people's nerves about you. Right? All right? And it's not always that you, in a relationship, that you actually let go of some of those things. Is that in each other, you overlook them. You don't see them anymore. You get it? All right? So it is a process where great joy does come. Okay? So I admit, this process of changing and the ego and letting things go is not what the ego is used to. But we no longer want to do what the ego is used to. Okay? What we want to do is be led in the path of righteousness. And that's what we're working to do. Now, I want to end with a reading. This is from today's Science of Mind magazine. It says, recently there was a study on the religious attitudes of baby boomers. Any baby boomers in here? It says, as they mature, they learn that spirituality must be a continuous practice, not a quick fix. For most of us, change happens incrementally. We can't overcome years of conditioning with one prayer or one workshop. We must be willing to do the hard work to change old beliefs, habits, patterns, and choices. And when we're willing to do that, our life unfolds joyfully and peacefully. As Reverend Tom Costa used to say, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I do not have to stop and build a condo there." Amen.